Our passion didn't start with a mouth. It started with people, with the well-being of the profession. And if you're like me, maybe a little bit of your nerdiness in all things tech too. We all want to love what we do, but the truth is burnout, people problems, and glass ceilings can keep us from doing what we set out to do. So let's get back to the heart of connection. Welcome to the Dental Handoff. This show is about passing you the knowledge, the habits, the systems, and the strategies to lead your teams, lean on your tech, and listen to your gut while you take care of people and truly the overall health of our communities. Let's stop using the wrong end of the toothbrush, y'all. My name is Dr. Kelly Tanner. Oh, and uniquely, I'm a dental hygienist too. You can consider me a guru in the dental and leadership industry. With over 3 decades of experience, my goal is to take you to the next level by empowering growth, perspective, and confidence. By identifying the gaps, recognizing the plaque, and extracting the truth with the other experts in the field. I'll share their stories, empower you to own yours, and elevate your passion in the process. So have a seat in the chair, put on your bib, and let's get to work. Welcome to the Dental Handoff. I'm Dr. Kelly Tanner, and I am at the Chicago Midwinter Dental Society meeting in Chicago. And today I have with me a friend, Christine Deal, and she is a big deal. She started her own podcast on the DSO Hygienist, and I want our listeners to hear all about that. Christine, the question I always ask is, why hygiene? I know that you're a hygienist, so yes. Why did you become a dental hygienist?
Well, I was a chemistry major, and so I really loved chemistry. My mom was a nurse, and I did not want to work on holidays and weekends and Sundays. And so I had a girlfriend who was a hygienist, and she's like, oh my God, you love science. Hygiene would be so great. It's wonderful if you have a family. You can work part-time when your kids are little. And so she kind of sold me on it, and I love it.
So where did you start from all this? Did you go from, how old were you then, would you say?
When I started hygiene school.
Well, when you had that conversation, would you say it was when you were?
Oh, no, I was probably in my 20s.
Okay.
Because I was in college at Northern, but I was still kind of flailing.
Yeah.
Not sure what I wanted to do. And I was like, I had someone I knew who was a chemist. And he was like, I would not tell my kids to go into this.
Okay.
And so then I kind of like reevaluated, like, oh, maybe this isn't what I want to do. So.
Okay. And so how far along were you in like your prereqs and stuff like that when you decided?
I was probably 2 years in.
Okay.
And then I went to hygiene school.
Okay.
So.
Cool. So then what was probably like, once you made that decision and you were in hygiene school, what was the kind of like the most surprising thing to you that you found out about being a dental hygienist that maybe you didn't know before?
There was a lot for me because I was never an assistant. So yeah. I never worked in the dental field before I went to hygiene school. So dental anatomy was a very difficult course for me because I was like, oh, there's curves on the teeth and there's this had many roots. And so that was kind of enlightening. I didn't know that teeth were so unique.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think. One thing I did not realize. Now, my mom was a nurse, and so this was kind of in the era of HIV.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So that was a big concern. And that was another reason I was thinking I didn't want to be a nurse.
Mm.
So that was a big surprise to me. I think I deal with way more blood than my mom ever did.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So that was kind of surprising.
You know, you bring up a good point. When I was talking to my hygienist she was trying to talk to me about, you know, hygiene is such a good profession because you get to care for people and you're caring. And I know that you love the human touch. I remember seeing her flossing someone, and I remember seeing that patient was bleeding.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you have to see blood all day? And she's like, yeah. She looked at me like, yeah, obviously, you know, but she didn't say that. But
yeah.
Now I'm thinking that she was probably like, yeah, Kelly, of course. But it's somehow she says you get used to it. And I don't know how you get used to it, but you just do get used to it. Right. Right?
Well, I think it's all very biologic. You know, it's more about the disease and helping people like that. And if I think of it like on that, the healthcare level, then all the other stuff doesn't bother me.
True. So you're thinking about like
calculus and all that. Yeah, all that stuff. So that's kind of how I think of it.
Yeah. So you graduated from hygiene school. You loved it. Tell me about like what kind of first practice that you were in. Was it a general practice?
I was in a general practice and right near my home. And I was very excited. Like I had a binder with all my oral hygiene instruction that I was going to give patients. And I was just like raring to go.
Yeah.
And my boss hired me and he was like, Christine, that was like the best interview I ever did. You were so excited. You had so much passion. He goes, oh my gosh, I just loved it. But I was kind of in a situation where I needed insurance.
Yeah.
Like medical insurance. And lucky for me, he actually gave me medical insurance, which I did not realize until years later that that wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
And so I'm very thankful that he saw enough in me to really invest in me.
Were you working full time for the practice at that point?
Yeah.
4 days a week?
Yep.
As an aide. Okay. Yeah, that was a big deal. I mean, what year did you graduate hygiene school?
92.
Okay. I was 96, so I get it. But even at that time, it was a big deal. Like you just, because they were small practices, and it didn't make sense for them to carry it from the team.
Right, right. It's expensive.
It is for the practice. And then once you get it, it's like not that good of insurance sometimes.
Right. And I think a lot of dentists, I interviewed with one who's like, oh, well, your husband, just be on your husband's insurance. And I was like, I don't have a husband. I need to take care of myself. So like that was a big plus.
Yeah. So then you worked for that general practice. What was your journey like after that?
You know, Dr. Palmer, who I worked for, was like a mentor to me pretty much my entire career. And I was so fortunate. He really believed in hygiene and he went out of his way to make sure like whatever we wanted, we got. And so, you know, we worked with lasers before that became the norm here in Illinois. And he just always really invested. And I think that was one of the greatest takeaways, to work with somebody like that, that was really thought you were an investment, not just, you know, the equipment, but you.
Yeah. So. Right. That it makes such a difference in the team and how long they stay, mm-hmm. how excited they are to come to work together, share their information with patients.
Yes.
Get their patients excited about being at that office. And it makes we don't talk about this enough, but When they can sense our excitement from a clinician, mm-hmm. they are proud to be a patient of that. They're like, yeah, I go to that practice.
Yeah.
You know, and then your name, then the practice's name gets known in the community for upholding the highest standard, versus that trust. And many times that's what drives the patients to the practice. It's that referral of, you need to go see Dr. So-and-so. I wouldn't even, because that's what we do anyway. We go by word of mouth referral.
Oh, for sure.
Anything that we do.
Yeah. And Google reviews.
Yeah. Right. And that's the second best thing. Right. But if a person is telling me, go see this person, this practitioner.
Oh, yeah.
Or hairdresser.
Yep. My chiropractor.
Yeah.
Was a referral. And I've referred like five persons to them because she's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's word of mouth is big.
So the doctor investing in the team, I think, all the way around, and I'm seeing such a big need for not just the training of the hygiene team, not just only for the other doctors and associates in practice, but for the team overall. So everyone is on one page when they're going in. So, all right. So then I know that you, because you told me a little bit about updating it, so I wasn't trying to bring too much of it in. You were working for a practice. Was this the same practice that then got bought?
Yes.
Okay.
So he sold us to a DSO. And initially, that was terrifying, honestly. Like, everybody was very upset. They felt a little betrayed because, you know, I think in general, in the private practice industry, DSOs are very classified as bad. So we all felt a little bit uncomfortable with what was going to happen. But in the same token, he was 70 years old. He had been wonderful to us and he had associates that just didn't work out. And unfortunately, with all the young dentists coming out, they're carrying so much debt, it's hard for them to purchase a practice. So I don't fault him for, you know, doing his due diligence. We have a wonderful DSO. I work for Decision One Dental, and they were great. The transition was great. He stayed on for a couple of years, and I'm not kidding. I think he was so happy at the end because he could just come in, talk to his patients, work on his patients, and go home and not have to worry about the overhead or the payroll or any of that stuff anymore. I just thought it was such a weight lifted off of him. I think his last couple of years of practice, he really enjoyed it. And I'm just so glad that he did his research on the DSO that he wanted us. He cared about all of us so much that he wanted to leave us with a good DSO.
Yeah. So at the time, was he a solo practitioner?
Yes.
Okay. So with the DSO acquiring your practice, were there other associates who then joined, or what happened with that?
We had an associate at the time when they bought our practice, but he decided to go into the city because that's where he lived. It was kind of a long commute for him. So currently we have a wonderful doctor, Dr. Ravi Barot, and he is just amazing. He does such great quality work, and he does everything Dr. Palmer did. That was a big thing to us. And we were very fortunate because the DSO let us meet some of the candidates.
Oh, wow.
That they were interviewing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And
I love that.
It was really great. And we actually all agreed that Dr. Ravi was the guy, because he did implants, he did extractions, he did very nice work. And Dr. Palmer did all that stuff in-house. So we really wanted a doctor who could treat our patients the way they're used to be treated. So that was huge for us. It was really great.
So what I hear you saying too, is that they included you somewhat in the decision-making of the practice. So that had to make you guys feel really good and built the trust with the DSO who purchased you as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was a good move on their part.
It was, because it gave us a little power, or we felt empowered, to actually be able to contribute to their decision and who they were going to pick. So that was very, I never had anyone do that before. Even Dr. Palmer, when he brought on new associates, didn't like get us together as a group and say, hey, what do you think of this one? So I thought that was really special.
So do you feel like, in your opinion, that like elevated your practice to be able to start to have those conversations then? Because you were just saying that the existing doctor didn't really bring you guys together to collaborate and input. But now the DSO is bringing you in to say, what do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think that brought you together stronger as a team?
Oh, for sure. And we really rallied around Dr. Ravi when he came on board, because he was just so...
Oh, that must have been him.
He's so awesome. We're just so lucky to have him.
So where is it now, current day?
Meaning?
So is he still the only practitioner there?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay. And then we have a specialist who comes once a month, a periodontist. So that's opened up a whole new thing for our patients, which is wonderful. And he's there on Wednesdays when we're all there. So I'm going to hopefully peek in and see some of his surgeries at some point. Nice. I really would like to do that.
What were, thinking back when you were worried about this, what did you think was going to happen and what actually happened? Contrast that for me.
Yeah. We thought, like everyone thinks, when you get bought by a DSO, everything changes. The procedures would change, or time constraints would change, and none of that changed. We are still a fee-for-service office, and we really didn't see that many changes.
Okay.
I think one of the things that I'm more aware of now, but I was always aware of, is the numbers. In our hygiene department, we were always very conscious of where our numbers are. And it wasn't numbers for production, but like numbers for patient care. Are you taking care of patients?
Yeah.
Are we diagnosing perio? Are we doing adult fluorides because we believe in it, because I believe in it?
And it's evidence-based.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of veneers and crowns, and I want those protected, so I want fluoride. And I would think my patients would want what I want. I want to give them the best care. So I think that that was kind of, I mean, again, it wasn't a big change for us because we had already been doing that internally.
Right. Right. You were already doing what was best for your patient.
Right.
And so a lot of people, well, not every DSO is the same.
Sure.
Is that true in your opinion?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, not all private practices are the same.
Yep.
Let's face it. There's good ones and bad ones. And I'm sure the same could be said in the DSO world. But I think there is a DSO for every hygienist. Mm. I know people that love to work at Aspen. I have a girlfriend who works at Heartland. Oh, she can't say enough good things about it. So I think it just really depends on what you want out of your career. And I think there could be any one of the DSOs could work for someone depending on what their goals are and what they want to achieve in their career.
Yeah. There are so many, like you were saying with your story, there are hygienists who are full of fear when they, because I teach at Virginia Peninsula Community College as a program director, and they're, what should I expect a DSO? And I know a lot of them are DSOs. What should I expect? It's like, it's for you to decide what you want. You got to figure out what you want first.
Right.
And it's, remember that if you change your mind, if you go and you try something, not that you're changing jobs every month, that's not what I'm intending to say, but if you go and you work for a practice and it's just not your jam, then you kindly say, you know what, here's some differences. You first try to talk about them, right, to make sure that everyone's aligned with their way of thinking, and maybe there's a growth opportunity there for both parties. But then at the end of the day, if you can't get behind what anybody's doing, whether it's a friend, whether it's a partner, no matter what this is in life, you have to be there to say you're a choice to make a different decision.
Right, right.
So I guess what I hear you saying is give it a chance. There is a DSO for a hygienist because they're not all structured the same.
Right,
right.
Right. And there's some DSOs, they're small DSOs. I have a girlfriend who's director of a smaller DSO, and there's larger DSOs. And again, it's kind of what you want to do with your career. Obviously, in a larger DSO, there might be more management opportunities for you to be a regional director or vice president of operations. I mean, there's a lot of different opportunities in those larger DSOs. So that's another thing you have to take into consideration. Again, where do you want to go with your career?
Yeah. All right. Let's back up a little bit, because as I'm listening to us talking, we know kind of like, some people may be down here and they don't know what a DSO even is and what the difference would be. So from what you have learned, what does a DSO do, like in general, from what you know?
You know, DSOs are just kind of centralized administrative part of the company. So they do a lot with the insurance. They're going to do more with the billing. So there's a lot of those type of functions that you no longer have to do. And I think that's really where the concept came out of, is having a centralized administration for all your different practices.
So purchasing of products, prophy paste, things like that is all streamlined.
It is, yes, but but we have choices.
Okay.
So we do, I don't order, but I know the person that orders in my office, she can have choices on what like prophy paste we want to use, if we want to use something specific or prophy angles or something like that. But a lot of times, you know, it's not that big of a deal, this one between this one. So, you know,
if you really found something XYZ that you loved, that you knew just outperformed what you had, they would be open to hearing about that.
I definitely think so. Yes.
Okay. So if from your perspective as a hygienist, what did you, so a DSO is basically, in a nutshell, generally speaking, on a high level, it's when an entity helps to manage the administrative tasks. So purchasing, accounts payable, accounts receivable, all that stuff to help you streamline and support your team and the efficiency of all of those things, because they have systems in place.
Yes.
Where you're not recreating the wheel for everything. Right,
right.
So if you think about it like that, and you're, and what I learned recently is like my functional health doctor has that for her. She has like DSO structure for her. It's interesting that it makes sense now that you think about it, but we're so immersed in dentistry, right?
Right, But and it's all about systems.
It is.
I mean, and streamlining systems, and that, yes, and that you get those same results time after time. Yeah.
And so if you think about it, too, with all the workforce shortages, if you have systems in place, they're repeatable, they're predictable. That's what offices want, yes, to know what they can expect every time.
Right.
So then taking this from a hygienist standpoint, how did it affect you? Did it affect you as a hygienist to have a DSO come in?
I don't see any effects. I don't think I practice any different.
Yeah.
So for me, there wasn't a lot of change. Obviously, there were new systems, new software, they implemented like the iTero. You know, there were different things we had to learn because they're integrating a lot of new technology, but not my day-to-day patient-to-patient, hygienist-to-patient experience did not change.
Yeah. So what would you say as a word of advice? First question is, if you're a hygienist who is working in a practice that is getting ready to be acquired by a DSO, what would you say to them?
I would say, hang on and ride it out. I mean, that's actually why I started the podcast, was because on Facebook, I'd see people say, DSO just bought my practice. Should I like quit now, start looking for another job? You know, like, and I was just like, wow, like not even giving it a chance. I mean, see what's going on or go through the transition. I just don't know why you would just turn off that opportunity and without a preconceived notion of what's going to happen.
Yeah. Fear-based.
Yes,
basically.
Exactly. So I guess that's why I really wanted to do the podcast, because I think there is so much greatness about DSOs that I just want to share that with everybody.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot of upside there that can benefit you. And like Christine was just saying, there's the ability for, it can actually improve your life with your, with your efficiencies. They help you, in my experience, kind of challenge your thinking a little bit about why am I doing this? Not challenge like challenge, but challenge like, okay, why am I doing this? Could I be doing this a little bit differently? You know, integrating 3D scanning with iTero.
Yeah.
That was a transition for you.
Yeah.
That could have been very scary and intimidating.
Yeah.
Which it probably was for the first 10 scans,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then new software. I mean, that's always a little bit of a learning curve on new software and stuff like that. But that's the only thing that's really changed for me clinically is new technology, new software, new x-ray systems, those kind of things.
So what got you on the other side of that fear there?
I'm just a do person, you know, like I'm just going to do. So that's how I learn best. And I guess I just go in. I think so many of us are so afraid all the time that we have to stop this.
Yeah.
And I try to turn fear into excitement.
Okay. Because it's just a different way for fear to express itself. Because that's actually essentially what it is.
Yeah.
Your body just doesn't know how to process it. So if you call it out, I think by name, to say, what is this fear really about?
Yes.
Is it true?
Right.
And if you're fearful of something that hasn't even already happened, that's like a false truth to yourself, right?
Right.
So your podcast, you are starting that and you're interviewing people. Tell us more about that as we close out.
So it's called the DSO Hygienist. I had Janet Hagerman was my first guest, and she was amazing.
So as we close this out, tell us a little bit about your podcast that you're starting.
It's called the DSO Hygienist. It's on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcast, and I'm interviewing hygienists that work clinically in the DSO, and I'm also interviewing industry leaders.
Okay.
Like my first one was with Janet Hagerman. She was amazing. She gave us a lot of great tips on different things about working in a DSO as a hygienist. I'm having a hygienist on at the next one. He's clinical and he travels around to different offices within his DSO, which is really amazing.
Yeah. There's so much flexibility with this, isn't
there? Yeah. There's a few other people that I'm excited to interview. I'm going to interview my boss about how to transition, Dr. Palmer, from how he decided to sell his practice to a DSO. So I think that's going to be very enlightening to see like what his mindset was and how he went about choosing the DSO that he sold to. So there's going to be a lot of different conversations we're going to have. I'm going to talk to a yoga instructor who's a hygienist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and she's going to give us some tips about, you know, all the different injuries hygienists can have and how to help combat those, make us more comfortable, make us, you know, better with our posture and stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited
to listen to it. Yeah.
And they're short. They're about a half an hour.
Yeah, just like this. Yeah.
Right, right. So it'll be an easy commute to work, walk the dog.
There you go.
You know, so, yeah.
Cook dinner.
Right.
Listen to your favorite podcast on Alexa or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry if I just set your Alexa off, but all you have to say is, Alexa, play the Devil Hand.
Right.
And she does. She's like, oh, playing now, playing. It's so wild to be able to do that.
That is cool.
Yeah, so yours will be able, or probably already is able to do that. So.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being on today. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the name of your, tell them the name of your podcast.
It's the DSO Hygienist. And the email is DSOhygienist@gmail.com. If you would like to be on my podcast, you can drop me an email and we can talk about it. It'd be great.
Her information is going to be in the show notes, so you guys check that out, how to get in touch with her. Thank you so much for being on today.
Oh, thank you,
Kelly. I've enjoyed our time.
Oh, me too. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So for all of you guys, do me a favor. Go on to Apple. Give us a 5-star rating. 5 stars. Christine, say bye. And then go on over to YouTube. Like, subscribe, share. Thank you so much for all that you're doing every single day, my friends. Be well. We will see you next time.